problems of technology. This evening we are scheduled to have a meeting wherein we are looking into the annual report of the Office of the Auditor General. But in the first instance, we have to receive the auditors. This comes after Honorable Singh. I was in Parliament today for the first time after the declaration of a state of disaster. So I chose to go and listen to the President today. It's a scenario which is a bit confusing a bit, but we are going to be there. Here we are on the 15th of October. We have hoped that at this time we'll be looking into scrutinizing this report, having received the final outcome for the appointment of the new Auditor General. Those who are busy with the process are advising that they are on the last laps of finalization of that process. It has been a bit a long process which introduced a number of things in between, and more specifically the openness of the process which has taken this kind of time. So we're meeting today having to welcome the auditors, and after we've had a few minutes, we'll invite the entire team as led by the Auditor General. We do so because the Audit Committee has a table report for us, but in the first instance, it is before we get to that report, in presence of the team, we must be appraised by the audit the team in the institution as to how have they proceeded through on the entirety of looking into the justifications in as far as the financials are concerned, and looking into such processes in as far as the continuum of a scenario of looking into overall governance in the institutions as the Office of the Auditor General. We are doing this for the second time. We hope that now is fairly understood that it is our interest to have this time exclusively with the audit committee and ourselves. So welcome the chairperson of the audit committee and the team. We have received the report, the senior report, your conclusions in the report, but I think as members of the standing committee would like to know as a standard as to how do you feel generally in the state of governance in the Office of the Auditor General.
Mr. Chair, I see on the screen that I'm shown as John. I'm John Beesman-Simmons. Thank you to you and your committee, honourable members. It's a privilege to be reporting back to you. The state of governance of the Auditor General is impressive to me. I've sat on a number of audit committees, including companies listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and the AGSA take their work very, very seriously. They realize the repercussions for the organization if they were to get a qualified audit report or a whole lot of poor findings. They have a finance team with a lot of depth. They have, in my view, an outstanding risk team. The risk and ethics department is very well run, very thorough indeed. And when you've got that formula there, and then you have internal and external audits going through everything and finding very little. Internal audit do a lot more systems work, so they did find a few items, but of more of an administrative nature, no real areas of grave concern, that's for sure. External audit, it was a very clean audit, not only in that it was a clean audit report, but that they find it very well run. I asked the audit partner, do your staff like to be on this audit? And he said it's one of the favorite audits of their whole client base. And that's an indication that, that things are going well.
Is there anyone who wants to ask a question to the audit committee? Or do so that after this we allow the Auditor General to get in the meeting?
Chairperson? Thank you very much and good evening everybody. I'm very pleased to hear this assessment from the chairperson of the audit committee. I received some correspondence. I don't know if others on the appointment of the auditors. Is that something that we're also talking about? Why misread the emails audited until 31st March 2021? Thank you.
If I may reply, Chair.
We're not yet on the proceeding. The purpose of this small session is just to look into the conduct of the entirety of the office of service of the areas of government, whether there are there anything that they can say in their presence. They feel that they should say only those things to us, so was allowing that process. And it looks like that the committee of the chair of the committee is of the view that is a very happy in the manner of things as how the office is run. There's no fear of any contradiction as such. Anything could be said in presence of the Auditor
General's team. I would add, as we reported last year, the accounts receivable, particularly from local governments, continues to be a matter of serious concern to the organisation and obviously to the external auditors who have to conclude as to whether they believe they are valid and recoverable. And I think last year I said to the committee that that's an area where you as an oversight mechanism can certainly help the DAG and her finance team and
okay.
The organization as a whole in terms
okay.
of supporting
okay. them. Okay. It looks like as we stand now there are no issues and therefore we can then stand to welcome the Auditor General and his team and so that the tabling of the report in its own entirety wherein we're going to start our in terms of the audit committee report and then from there going to the report by the Auditor General. Is that fine?
Yes, sir.
That's right. I see here, welcome Deputy Auditor General. Who else is here? Deputy Auditor General?
Yes, Chair. Good evening to you, Chair. The Auditor General has asked that I represent him and offer his apologies to the committee. He had a family emergency cop-up. but he has asked that I represent, I lead the team in representing him. With me today are Ajil, whom you know, who's our corporate secretary, Alice Miller, who's the acting national leader, the CFO, Bonnie Ngoma, whom you know as well, and Jan van Kalkbe. I don't see him on here, but he might be joining later. And Svetlana, who's our head of strategy, is on the call.
I'm
here,
Chair.
From the AG. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, Deputy AG. Can we take note of the apology of the general? Because up until this time, he was committed to be part of the meeting. Nevertheless, his deputy is in standing in for him. Welcome. Colleagues, can we start then to receive the report from the audit committee?
Chair, may I take it as read, because we've been allocated a very short time on the agenda.
Yes.
But the agenda is set out on the second page, and I'll just go straight to the business. In terms of the Public Audit Act, and in accordance with the King Code on governance, we are required to prepare a report of the Audit Committee. That was done as part of the final wrap-up of the audit and is contained in the integrated annual report just before the annual financial statements. Our mandate is to fulfill duties as set out in the Act and in our terms of reference, and to provide support to the Deputy Auditor General and assisting her in fulfilling her responsibilities and duties. There are three members on the committee at this point in time. They need to be between three and five, so we have three. We do have four, but one resigned due to a conflict as she had taken up a role at the IDC. In terms of an overview of our activities, we'll be covering internal audit, external audits, the transformation plan of the external auditors, risk management, and I've already covered the aspects of we always have to consider the role that the Chief Financial Officer and her finance team play and do an assessment of those. I'll skip over that because I've already said that it's an impressive team. If I move on to the overview of the internal auditors, we had as we reported last year, there was a change of the internal auditor, and Ngubani and company took over, so this was the first year they've done the internal audit. We as a committee review and approve their internal audit strategy, the internal audit plan, the charter, and obviously their budget. We receive reports from them, and as I indicated earlier, no matters of significant concern were reported to us. Again, in accordance with King, we meet with the internal auditors without management presence to make sure that they feel that their scope was not restricted in any way. And also, question that we always ask is, were they asked to suppress any of their findings? And they said no, not at all. As is the norm, there will be a healthy debate about issues, and that happens in virtually any organization, but certainly no scope restrictions, no suppression of information. We get a written assessment from them on their view of the adequacy and effectiveness of the risk management process and the internal control. they operate on a three-year plan, a rotational plan, so they don't do everything each year. So it's very difficult for them to give an overall opinion when they've only done a third of the rotational plan. However, they did review other aspects, whether they looked at what prior auditor, internal auditors had done, and they looked at the findings from the current external auditors, and on the work that they did, they were happy to give us assurance that the systems in place are adequate and are operating effectively. The overall risk environment is assessed as being moving on to external audits, your committee chair are all aware that your committee appoints the external auditor. We put up recommendations to you, and we make sure that the external auditors are independent and not conflicted in any way. We look at their audit approach, audit risks, key audit matters, their budget, etc. Another key issue is to make sure that they believe it's appropriate to prepare the financial statements on the going concern basis. The CFO and her team put up a very good document explaining why they believe it's a going concern. The auditors, external auditors, concurred, and based on what we could see and read, we also agreed that was appropriate. We look at accounting policies, accounting treatments, areas of significant judgment. A key example of that would be the provision for doubtful debt. We need to make sure that they're prepared in compliance, particularly with international financial reporting standards, and obviously in accordance with the Public Audit Act. We review the management report that Crow presents to the DAG. We obviously review the reports in the financial statements, the report on performance against predetermined objectives, and disclosures in the integrated annual report. We make sure that they do not do any material non-audit service work which could compromise the independence. Again, we met with them separately without management being present and asked similar questions of them as I mentioned with the internal audit. The end of the audit, the DAG has to sign representation letters to the external auditors. We review those and recommend to her that she signs this. The external auditors also present a summary of unadjusted differences, and there were no material matters to report from that side. And overall, we recommended to the DAG that she should go forward and sign the financial statements. An issue that we paid a lot of attention to with the external auditors is a matter of their transformation plan. The previous SCOAG and the previous Parliament were very concerned that we were recommending an external auditor to the committee for appointment that had a broad-based Black economic empowerment rating of 8, where 1 is the best. To a certain extent, that is influenced, not the rating, but all the large firms and most of the medium-sized firms, and certainly the emerging Black firms, Black-owned and particularly Black woman-owned firms, virtually all of them do work on behalf of the Auditor General and therefore could not take on the role of external auditor. you know, circumstances, we just couldn't find, we struggled. I think we went through four tenders before we eventually found a firm that we felt were capable of doing the work. We passed the word back to them that SCOAC was very disappointed to hear their rating, and they, when they started back in 2017, they were level 8. They progressed to level 7 in 2018, and by last year they had increased that significantly to a level 4 contribution, contributor, and particularly focused on improving black representation in the executive management, and also on skills development. They have committed to improving that further to level 3. The summary of the score sheet is shown on the document, but I don't propose to go through that because I think I'm probably over my 10 minutes already. Moving on to risk management, the strategic risks of the organization are monitored, and we play an oversight role on that. We need to be sure that they are of an acceptable level. You cannot eliminate risk at all, but you want to mitigate it as much as possible. So there is always inherent risk, and you just want to manage it down to an acceptable level. And the Risk and Ethics Department do a really good job in that respect. They certainly spend time setting out a risk appetite statement, and also make sure that there's a combined assurance matrix or a model and matrix in place to help help monitor risks and how they are controlled at different levels. I'm not going to go into all the detail in the report, but nothing came to our attention that would cause, that would impact the conclusion that the control procedures needed significant improvements, and again, that internal controls are largely adequate and effective for the overall risk rating for medium, as I mentioned earlier. The key decisions that need to be considered by your committee, Mr. Chair, is the we wrote a letter to you in September recommending that Pro be reappointed as the external auditors. So that speaks to Honourable Singh's question that he raised earlier. And then in the financial statements, there's a special audit service reserve that was set up back in the days when there was an audit commission before the audit committee came about. Audit Committee was constituted in 2005. This reserve, which is not material in itself, has not moved at all in the last 15 years. And we are recommending that be transferred into the general reserve, and in particular that it be used to mitigate some of the long outstanding debt of the Auditor General South Africa. So those are our recommendations to your committee as key decisions that need to come out of today's meeting. So I think I'll just wrap up on that. There is a conclusion in the document, but I've covered it already in what I've said. We did comment that we acknowledged that Mr. Kimi Mkhwetu is nearing the end of his office. He was the DAG before he was AG, and we worked very closely with him. And we just paid tribute to him as part of our conclusion. So, Chair, I'm very happy to take questions from committee members.
Thank you very much, Chair, of the audit committee. Honourable members, are there any clarity matters that you want to raise.
Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you to the Chair of the Audit Committee. Just a couple of issues that I picked up, and maybe, you know, we can get some responses. I think we all know that auditors are quite mean with their assessments. You know, even the Auditor General's office, when they assess any department, they don't use words like excellent and very good. So in this case here, when it comes to internal audit, they say it was satisfactory. And there were some control deficiencies, although they were not considered high risk. I just want to know, how will those control deficiencies be mitigated? Because I think the Office of the AG needs to set the bar very, very high when it comes to their own audit. So that's one. The second question will relate to a view of the Audit Committee on bad debts. And what advice do they give the Office of the Auditor General on bad debts? And the last one would relate to the last issue raised, is the special audit reserve of almost 5 million. I can't recall, because I've been serving on this committee for many, many years, I can't recall why we set up the special audit reserve, but I'm questioning myself why we set it up and why do we now want to move it to general reserve? Is there no need for use of those funds for the purpose that it was set aside? Thank you, Chairperson.
Should I respond now, or do you want other members to
before we respond, is there any other question? Colleagues, is there any other question? Looks like there's no other question. So we can respond, the Chair, or any other member of the audit committee. I saw someone there who's part of the audit committee. Whom you're with, so if they feel that they can answer, they are free to provide such answers as well.
Okay, yeah, the other two members, Carol Clayley and Cedric Munkura, are both on hand, and maybe I should ask them if they want to say anything, and then we can get on to answering Honourable Singh's questions.
May I respond?
Yes.
Honourable Chair, thank you so much. This is Carol Grellem. Good evening, all honourable members.
How are you, Honourable Chair?
Am I audible?
You are audible.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to respond to the question around sort of not using the word terms excellent and speaking with satisfactory. Our system of internal controls indeed need improvement, but largely they are adequate and effective and do provide us with reasonable assurance that the business objectives will be met. When we say need improvement, we are basically saying we acknowledge that yes, there are a few isolated areas that require design and operational improvement and much more effort from management. But however, it's not something that we should be alarmed about. And overall, we are comfortable and satisfied that the controlled environment has not deteriorated. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Chair, if I could add
these meetings, at times they appear on our parliamentary TV. So it would be good that those who are watching us in such meetings, They see us, not shadows. So please, when people talk, they should feel free to press the button of the video.
Apologies are noted, Chief.
Thank you.
And Chair, if I can add to what my colleague has just said, Honourable Singh, one of the things that that they do is they have a tracking log, and any items that have come up in management reports are added onto that log, and we track it to make sure that they are being addressed, and that they are either cleared or are work in progress. We haven't, to my recall, we've never had a an answer along the lines of, I don't know, we haven't had time to get to that. They do pay attention to the comments that come in. In terms of bad debts, Honourable Singh, as an audit committee, we meet, we have three meetings per annum of approximately 4 hours per meeting. So we are very much in oversight role. We don't do any audit work. So our role is really to elicit information from the external auditors and make sure that they are happy with the level of provision now called an expected credit loss. Is the new term for provision for bad debts, and they were indeed happy with the provision that has been set up. So I can't really go into more detail than that. We do see age analyses and the like, and split down into the various levels of government, national, provincial, local. But we don't go into the detail ourselves, so I can't really add anything to that. The Special Audit Reserve it was set up before I got involved as well, so I don't know the actual detail, but it rings a bell that it was a reserve that could be used for if special audits were required, and the auditee wouldn't have the money to pay for them. Something along those lines. But it's, so that's why we suggested that rather than just sitting there year in, year out, that it would be just transferred into general reserve and would be a source of reserve that could be used indeed for those entities that cannot afford to pay their fees. So to give some relief from that.
Honorable Chair.
Yes.
It's Frederick Mamburu here. Just to add to one or two to the point that the responses from my colleagues. On the bad debt, what we have seen in the maybe just as a bit of background, I joined the audit committee about 2 years ago. And last year when I look at the bad debts, the bad debts was really, the numbers were really manageable. If you look now, I think the numbers have actually deteriorated mainly as a result of COVID. And I think that the DAG will go into detail in that regard. I think the reason for the deterioration is really their collection peaked around March, April, and that's when we have the hard lockdown because of the disaster act management. The other thing that they've been doing on the slow payers, they've been making some arrangements with the municipalities or whoever is owing them to make a payment plan through some ring fencing arrangements, and it seems like that has been working quite well. I think that they also have a slight dealing with that in the reports. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I hope that Honorable Singh, you are satisfied with the responses. If you are, we have then those two matters that we must carry them as part of our decisions, which we have to take as part of this meeting. One, the audit reserve, and two, the matter of appointment of the external auditors. One is very happy about the indication as to how the growth of meeting the requirement of inclusiveness as part of the team is. That is the matter that we were somewhat worried about in the previous financial year when we made that decision. So and I'm sure members will take it that further when we get into that point of making that decision. I would want to us to cross over to the Office of the Auditor General, but let's take that opportunity to having had the recommendation as per that letter in terms of appointment of the external auditors. We probably have our own reflection on such. Is there anyone who want to make a proposal to that regard? Or is there any other thing that we could do around such? Hello?
We can hear you, Chair.
Can you hear me, eh?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Just lost in the technology. So can we take a decision on those matters? The first matter, appointment of the of external auditors. Is there anyone want to make a proposal on that matter?
Chairperson, I propose that we retain the external auditors that we've had, given the report that we've received from the chairperson of the audit committee.
I have a proposal from Honorable Singh. Is there any seconder?
Who's second?
I'm disempowered here. You see, I'm close up. I can't see any other thing. Can someone assist me to just bring me on any other matter in as far as the technology is concerned? But I could hear members who are seconding Honorable Singh. Want the name of the first offender? Honorable Sipo Singwe seconding. Is there any opposition to the matter? Agreed, yeah?
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you very much. Then we are off the matter. The matter of appointment of the external auditors is agreed upon by the committee without a date on the work as reported by the audit committee. And the committee remains happy with that kind of report. The second matter relates to the reserve, which ought to be taken away from the standalone the audit reserve to the general reserve. What we have a problem with that?
Chairperson?
It's
saying yeah. No, I have no fundamental problem, but perhaps you know we. You just need to know the background of that again, and I can appreciate that the chairperson of the audit committee was not there. You know, we may just find as we move forward there is need for that fund because it has been ring-fenced for the special audits. I mean, if I just think what special audits are, it's probably audits that we don't normally do, you know, like performance audits and things like that. But some clarity, perhaps on the DAG before, you know, I'm comfortable that we say move it to a general reserve where it will just get absorbed by other things that the office may want to do.
Okay. I take it that Honorable Singh is emphatic on the point that the paramount existence of the Office of the Auditor General is to be able to conduct audits as per a regulated environment. And there might be special audits made, and there must be some kind of a fiscal support around those. And therefore, there must be some kind of a indication by the Office of the Auditor General, and in this, ask the Deputy Auditor General, who is part of the meeting. What is your understanding, DAG?
Thank you, Chair. That reserve has been around longer than even I've been around. And we tended not to apply towards anything specific. And that it kind of sits on the balance sheet as a reserve. In terms of the nature of the different audits we do and how we fund them, we have an annual audit program, and that becomes the basis on which we allocate resources. So I'm not concerned that transferring this particular reserve towards the general reserve is going to impede us from doing special audits in the way that we've done already. I think you've seen us do special audits and a number of performance audits without specifically applying that reserve. So it tends to become more the disclosure item on the balance sheet. There isn't a bank account set aside for it. The cash is already sitting in the a general cash flow that the office applies anyway. So I don't think moving it to a general reserve is going to have any impact on the work that we do and on how we manage our resources, Chair. I hope that helps.
I hope it helps, Honorable Singh. The fear you have, I have, is that generally when there are amounts which are somewhat set aside for specific purpose, they are now taken off from that specific purpose into a general envelope. They might be absorbed in that instance, and they're no longer available for that specific purpose. Is there harm if we say no kept at the general packaged reserve? We handle such a reserve within prescriptions. If there is anything of the sort, so that it's a tagged amount within the general reserve mode. Is there a problem with that? The general?
Chair, there's absolutely no problem. What we could do to be more methodical about this is we can leave the special reserve as we currently sit, and over the course of this year, as we roll out the special audits, we can allocate those funds to some of those in a more transparent way. That way, any decision about the application of those funds is transparent, and it can always be reflected upon long after we've all moved on to it. So I'm quite happy to leave it as is for now and undertake to deal with it over the forthcoming year.
Okay. Is that not fine? Is that in order, sir?
Can I ask a question?
You are free to ask it.
Yeah, but stay on.
Okay, ma'am.
I just wanted to find out from the Deputy Auditor General if the committee has not been affected by any budget cuts like other departments. Did you get my question, sir?
Yes, I'm sure it's got the question. We've got a question, though, as we would know, that the Office of the Auditor General receives no allocation from Fiscus. So far, is one of the things that we're still battling with. It only lives on its own tariff charges, which are the earnings for the audit that they perform. That's why we're talking about the debt, which is a bit spiraling, mainly from the local government, and we are very much concerned about it. But the AG, the village, you have any comments there?
Yes, Chair, I think you've answered the question perfectly well. I would only add that the impact of the pressures on the budgets of the different entities that we interact with, our clients, would have a direct impact on, or directly affect our auditees and therefore our revenues. So we are starting to see that in terms of pressure around what we can charge for our audits and also what we can collect because of budget cuts. But we'll probably talk a little bit more about that when we deal with the financials and the forecasts as well.
Okay.
Yes, Chair, it's John B. Simpsons again, Chair of the Committee. I've just looked up in the financial statements the wording that is in there, and if I can read it to you, it says, a fund set aside to finance special investigations or audits whose cost the AGSA may not be able to recover from the specific auditee. The former Audit Commission instructed that the reserve should not be increased, further, should not be increased before further guidance is provided by SCOTA. So, they shouldn't increase it, but the wording in the financial statements doesn't give any guidance in terms of whether it may be utilized or not. And I think with the DAG's proposal was to leave it where it is for now and then review it as they go about the next financial year and perhaps utilize it where there's a specific need for that.
Thanks, Chair. I think from what we get is that the money remains in the reserve for the Office of the Audit General to be enabled to conduct its own work specifically on the investigative work or the special audits that they would somewhat support, or even where they are unable to receive such a kind of finances to perform such audits. And the DAG is saying that they would come back with a proposal in a transparent way as to how can at best be such a available amount can be utilized as the proposal, and at that time we'll then have our own engagement be able to decide. Is that not fair?
That's fine, Tim.
That's fine. If that is fair, can we pass this? So we have taken a decision on the reserve, and we have decided on the appointment of external auditors. So the matters that have been raised by the committee have been fairly dealt with. The language has been fairly dealt with. I'm going to apply the audit language. Fairly dealt with. And on such, I think let's appreciate the fact that at appropriate times you appear in the committee and you are able to provide a report in support of the annual financials, which is the standard practice, but even more than such, you are available to do it as a team, as a unit in as far as the committee that looks into the health of the institution financial. So let's appreciate that together to yourself and your team. Thank you so much. Can we bring the DAG? DAG?
I'm right here, Jim.
Are you ready for your 20 minutes?
I'm ready, Chair. I will keep to that. Thank you very much. I must commend you on your use of worded language as you concluded the last item. thank you, Chair. We do have a presentation and we have shared with you the annual report. I will end for brevity. I've heard your input. The annual report that we are sharing with the committee today relates to the financial year that ended on the 31st of March 2020. It reflects the performance of the year for the 12 months up until then. However, we've used the report and the narrative therein to share with the committee and other stakeholders the achievements of the office over the last 5 years of implementing the 4B strategy. And Chair, members will recall that this is the strategy that was implemented under the guidance and vision and leadership of AG Mabwik. So our annual report that sits with you now talks to reflections on the journey of the office over the last 5 years. I'll start with the Public Audit Act, which was a major change in the mandate of the office, and that followed the amendment of the Public Audit Act on the 1st of April 2019, that being the effective date. So the year that we're reporting on really reflects the first year of our implementation of the new powers as per the amended Act. Chair, you might recall that we indicated that we were going to implement these new powers on a phased approach. So we started in the PFMA cycle with 16 auditees and in the MFA cycle with 9 auditees. So a total of 25. We aim to ramp up over this financial year that we're already in, having started on the 1st of April 2020, to increase the PFMA cycle audit under PAA as amended to 89, so from 16 to 89, and MFMA from 9 to 57, so a total of 146 auditees. Our intention is to learn from the experiences of the first phase of implementation and to continue to improve how we are implementing the amended path. The last financial year was really about, yes, implementing the first phase, but also creating the policies and the internal pieces that inform the implementation. We also made sure that we trained all of our staff right across the office, so all of our audit teams have been trained on how to implement these paths. We've used the time to develop and to enter into the key MOUs with the public bodies that we're going to rely upon as we implement these powers. And we've also used the time to establish the key structures that support the AG's decision making. One being the Material Irregularities Committee, which is an internal committee looking at all MIs, and then an advisory committee on MIs, which includes external members to support the AG in making a decision about issuing a certificate of debt. We include in our integrated report some reflections on how the first phase of implementation actually went, Chair, and I know we've shared this with the committee before, but I think it is important to highlight that the first year saw us identifying 39 material irregularities in the PFMA cycle and 6 material irregularities in the MFMA cycle. And those reflected or represented potential financial loss of 4 billion in the PFMA and 25 billion in the MFMA. And I think this is the key contribution to the journey of consequences as demonstrated by how the accounting officers have taken an active interest in implementing consequences themselves. So their response has been most encouraging in that the instrument is starting to do what it is designed to do, which is to start to increase the incidence where there is visible consequence management where things go wrong, and there is active engagement in recovery of financial loss, but importantly, on fixing the systems that do create potential for leakage throughout the system. And Chair, you'll recall that the nature of the MIs related to procurement methods, as well as to methods on paying for goods and services that were not received. I'm going to ask that we then move on to talking to the 4Bs over and above the PAA, because I know that we've had this engagement with this committee. As you recall, Chair, our 4Bs comprise value-added auditing, visibility for impact, viability, and then vision for value. So I will talk to each of those 4 goals in terms of the key achievements under them. The first one on value-add, I think it's important to put into context the work that we did on the COVID-19 special audit. In pursuit are we showing that this office does add value into the system of governance by providing timely and relevant insights to those that run government, by being responsive to the environment within which we find ourselves, and by responding to the needs and expectations of stakeholders. When we found ourselves in the middle of this pandemic and there was this relief package that was announced by the president, and the same president then requested the AG to support the system in safeguarding these resources and in providing some assurance that these resources were reaching the intended beneficiaries, we responded by designing a proactive real-time audit, which has been the subject of engagement with yourself, wherein we deployed the talent and the capabilities that the that government or that citizens have effectively invested in our office, and we were able to provide timely, relevant insights that allowed accounting officers and executive authorities to take the key action around not just consequence management, but fixing the system so that you do get a system within which the prevalence of leakage starts to diminish. We're engaged right now, Chair, in the follow-up work, which we will issue in the special report 2 later in the month of November. So the AG will release that report and launch it publicly as per the normal course. The key issues in the identified through that audit are listed there. I'll just highlight that we found that the need to focus on implementing consistently preventative control within the system on which government runs, that becomes ever more important. Indeed, much of the problem results because we don't have adequately strong internal controls. So one of the key takeouts is that we must continue to advocate for the implementation of such controls throughout the system. If I look at the audit outcomes over the years, PFMA, you've seen the five-year profile, not much improvement over the 5 years, really a net regression, especially if you take in the dominance of the unqualified audits, the qualified audits, and then even the increases in the outstanding audits. On local government, the picture is even more pronounced on regression, highlighting that we need to apply ongoing effort in strengthening the systems of governance within local government, this being the sphere that is closest to the lived experiences of South African citizens. Chair, over the year, we continue to increase the number of audits that are conducted by our staff. And if you look at the profile from 2010, where we were doing 757 audit reports in a year, and now at 1,000 audit reports every year, and you compare it to the increase in our staff, there's an interesting story about how we've become more efficient in conducting more audits with fewer staff members. So I think this is tribute to the office becoming more efficient and learning to do more with less. And of course, increasing its footprint across the public sector. The next slide, Chair, highlights that we tend to, whilst we've increased the number of audits we are completing, we've tended to slip in terms of being able to complete them on time. And there are a number of reasons for that. Which is listed there, and I think we've spoken to you about before, which is really about the quality of financial statements that we receive for audit, the slow responses on requests for information, the delays in submitting financial statements, but also the pushbacks as well as threats and intimidation. The 2021 year, in which we are currently auditing the financials for PFMA cycle, and then for MFMA cycle for the years ended in 2020, our completion rate is going to be even lower, mainly because of the disruptions associated with COVID. So as we recover from COVID and we recover from the lockdown and we rebuild the critical system, it's going to be important for our office to use the opportunity to confront and address the challenges that present themselves to us much more decisively. Not just our office, but also the OSP in terms of improving quality of financials, improving timely submissions, and diminishing the incidence of pushback, threats and intimidation. And of course, we would have settled on our journey of implementing the MI. So I'm looking forward to seeing how we are able to use the opportunity presented by the crisis to rethink how we engage and also to address the challenges. Chair, incidents of altered conversation continue, and I think we've spoken about that before around how there is pushback and what the reasons are for it. The next slide highlights the journey on our methodology, and I think the major point here, Chair, is that we have increased the manner in which we integrate the opportunity for integration of our different audit lines. So a regularity audit now includes performance audit insights, the input of investigations, and the input of information systems auditors. And all of that is increasing the quality of what we do as well as the value add into the system of governance. And we'll continue to build on that. I'll just go to the slide on the SOEs. I think that's always a story of much interest. Chair, in response to requests from the executive and from Parliament, we've had a rapid increase over the period of 5 years on the number of SOEs that we ordered directly, increasing from 6 that we were auditing directly back in 2013-14 to 14 out of the 21 Schedule 2. So that's from 6 to 14 in 5 years, so that's pretty rapid. We're currently working on taking over these signing responsibilities for the Transnet audit, and we are currently supporting the auditors that have been appointed to sign off on ESCOM. The next slide, Chair, talks about our audit quality. I remember that this was a conversation that was of great interest to the committee last year, where we reported that decrease in our audit quality. We've implemented the audit quality improvement plan that we spoke about last year. We've seen a slight increase from 72% to 76%, so we are improving. We're not where we want to be, and so we'll continue on that journey. On visibility, which is the next goal, we've continued our regular engagement with stakeholders. Accounting officers have benefited in large part from our status of records reviews, and we'll continue to build that. And a key part of that conversation and that work is about alerting accounting officers to the risks that they might confront when they come in to audit. And a key part of our messaging and our advocacy is really around preventative controls and the implementation thereof. We continue to enjoy the audiences of executive authorities as well as oversight across all spheres of government. And we have built partnerships and collaboration across civil society, working in the main with academics, professional bodies, business organizations, as well as other civil society organizations. And our journey on driving citizens' awareness on the work that we do, the relevance of the work that we do, have also continued to enjoy our attention. In the international domain, we have continued our work within InfoSight, as well as particularly through chairing the Capacity Building Committee of InfoSight, and it included a profile of the major achievements that have been realized over the term of our chairmanship. Much of it really about the journey of professionalizing the people who work within the different supreme audit institutions across the world. Our work within the African continent continues to be grounded in how we support the Secretariat of AFOSIE. That's something that honorable members are familiar with, and it's really become an important launchpad to work with other sides across the African continent and to contribute to the work of supporting the different sides in their own journey. I know that I've moved quickly on visibility, Chair, but really because it's really things that Chair, the honorable members are familiar with. On viability, our 3,600 dedicated staff continue to operate as patriotic professionals. The profile of the people within the office interestingly matches the racial and gender profile of South Africans. So really we are a South African organization, a young organization with an age, average age of 34. This is a slide, Chair, that I think warrants some attention around our journey towards professionalization. In 2015, we had 980 audit professionals comprising CAs, RGAs, those are the registered government auditors, ACCAs, and the certified information systems auditors. In 2020, we are now at 1,327 audit professionals. 682 of those are CASA, and that's a 25% increase over 5 years. The RGA now at 506, a 45% increase. The ACCA, 74% increase. And the information systems auditors, a 50% increase. This talks, Chair, to the depth and the diversity of the talent that is within the office. And indeed, our aim is to continue to develop it, to nurture it, and to leverage it so that South Africans benefit from the work that these talented individuals do. Our TA scheme has been improving over time. The one thing I will highlight, Chair, is that if you look at the number of people that are presenting themselves to write the board exams, the final qualifying exams for qualification as chartered accountants, that number has increased fivefold for Part 1. So what we call ITC, moving from 120 candidates to 689 candidates. And if you look at the second part of the board exam, APC, increasing eightfold over the reporting period. We've continued to invest in our leadership capabilities, in our technical capabilities, in the soft skills of our people. So the investments that you know us to be busy with, Chair, we have continued to make, and we continue to find every way to be efficient about that spend and to maximize the value of that spend within our environment. On the IT system, we still need a new voter software, but we have upgraded the software that we do have from our teammate R11 to R12. We've continued to streamline our ERP system, and we've implemented our managed cyber security service, which we have said we would do. Fortunately, up until now, we've had no cyber breaches, and everyone's been working from home, and we've been able to create the necessary platform for people to work from home. The last one of our these chairs relates to the vision and values. On the transformation side, where we've maintained our level one rating, and as we know, Chair, attaining level one is often easier than retaining it. So very proud that we've been able to do that. We've been also able to contribute to the development of firms that operate in our space, the private sector auditors to whom we outsource our work. We've used the enterprise supplier development program to empower and to support the entrepreneurs that are auditors and want to start their own firm, and that's created jobs within the sector, and that's created the opportunity for individuals to create sustainable businesses. Risk management, Chair, the audit committee covered this in their report. So I won't talk much about that, save to say that indeed there have been improvements as you would expect. On the complaints management side, we've had a complaints management and an internal whistleblowing mechanism established, which is bearing fruit in terms of creating a platform for people to blow the whistle and be kept protected as complainants and have their complaints attended to. We've also had an ethics maturity assessment done by an independent provider, which find us to have a double A rating. The best rating is a triple A rating, so a double A rating ain't bad at all. On the financial performance side, Chair, we've had very strong financial performance, demonstrating efficiencies on the audit side, efficiencies on the operational side. We've controlled our overhead well. We've even sustained the 65 million rand that we paid to implement the PAA. We've driven collections, even though the lockdown period did hamper our efforts quite a bit. But I think the fact that we've been investing in this area for many years now did stand us in good stead and allowed us to have a cash flow buffer, a cash margin that we could rely upon. As part of saving costs and being cautious, especially in the context of lockdown, we didn't pay bonuses and neither did we advance an increase to our staff. We normally would do that in the month of August. However, at the time that we needed to make those decisions, being May and June and July, okay, there was still a lot of uncertainty. We had our audit cycle delayed. There was major uncertainty about the economy, about the public purse, and we knew that we had to safeguard the cash resources available. We've been able to get back up to encouraging levels of productivity and financial performance. We're not out of the woods yet, but it is encouraging that things are starting to look better. In that regard, we are asking Chair, which is a key decision we're requesting from the committee today, is for us to retain the surplus. So we've generated a surplus of 190 million rand this year. And much of it is because of the savings we've been able to garner over the period. And our request to the committee is that we be allowed to retain that. It's important to remember, Chair, that this 190 million rand is currently not in the form of cash. It is a surplus that sits on the income statement. We are yet to collect it. However, in the context where we are still struggling to catch up on our budget because of the lockdown and the delayed audit, as well as the impact of slowing debt recovery, especially with an economy as such as what we have, the pressure on collections will continue. The pressure around implementing these extended powers, especially this bigger phase two implementation, and the need for us to find ways to invest in the technology that's necessary for us to drive our environment. So, Chair, our request for approval is that we retain the service. I think that's about it, Chair. 22 minutes, 45 seconds. Chair, you're on mute. Chair, you're still on mute.
Do your work as the chief auditor. Thank you so much, Deputy Auditor General, for the report. And there is the report from that side, a decision that is sought from us is based on the surplus. And also, Deputy Auditor General, the surplus, which is about 190 million rand, as it stands so far. Are there any questions from your colleagues?
Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you to the DNG for that report. And I'm not going to say satisfactory. I'm not going to say excellent, but I'll say very, very good report. So that's a new audit term, Chairman, that we got, so to say. Just one or two things that I wanted to raise. In terms of the surplus, I personally and as a party, I don't think we have a problem with retaining the surplus. But the surplus is a result, as the DAG said, of them working smart. But it must not detract us from the fact that the bad debts, we've got to deal with local government bad debts. We've got to continue dealing with those resistant authorities. And also we've got to continue putting pressure on National Treasury, because I note that the 50 million rand appropriation did not materialize and had to be absorbed. So that's just one of the issues that perhaps the DAG can respond to. The second thing that I wanted to raise is we just hope when we look at next year's report, Honorable Chairperson and colleagues, that in terms of outsourced audit work, which amounts to 686 million, 51% goes to black-owned firms. And I think really we'd like to see an increase in that percentage. And the last issue that I wanted to raise is perhaps at some stage the Office of the AG can give us specific reports, Chairperson, on the certificates of debt, so that we are aware of, you know, who they've been issued to, what is the outcome. So even the general public need to follow that. And a very last one is, you know, during COVID, the office did an excellent job because they were targeted, they were specific. Can that same methodology be continued when they are doing the normal audits? Because I think they might have learned from what happened during COVID in the way you do these audits. Thank you very much, Professor.
Honorable Singh, are there any other questions, comments from other colleagues? AG, I think in addition to what Honorable Singh has been referring to, is that we have noticed the new way of dealing with the audit, specifically on the COVID-19 audit, which relates to about 140 plus a billion rand audit that have been conducted out of the 500 billion rand. What sort of lessons are transferable to this statutory audit, you see, approach that could somewhat enhance both the functionality of the Office of the Auditor General and the responsiveness of the auditees, specifically the public sector that you see response on matters which are related to findings that you have somewhat made. What are those kinds of things that we could really take forward? I think Honorable Singh has been asking that question, which could enhance, you see, the ability of the state to function appropriately and to stem and be able to stretch the ethical conduct in as far as financial accountability and management is concerned. You've done this within a short space of time, and but definitely, if it was done by your office, how can we then look into taking that through the regular operations of the Office of the Auditor General? Are there any other questions, colleagues? Okay, DAG?
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Singh, thank you for the compliment. I will make sure that we pass it on to not just the AG himself, but also to the team throughout the office. The surplus, indeed, it is out of working smart. It is also out of some unsustainable decisions about no salary increases, no performance bonuses. At some point, we may have to reckon with how we deal with that. And yes, that did continue to plague us. Chair, the Public Audit Act amendment included an amendment to Section 23 around the 1% debtors and creates a mechanism for the office to access the National Revenue Fund so that we are not limited by the funds within the budget of the National Treasury of the Department, but rather to find ways to access the National Revenue Fund. I don't think any of us are blind to the limitations within the public, so we will continue to struggle to collect from some of the smaller auditees, but I do think it is a good development, the one about Section 23. Over this year, like many others, we've enjoyed a lot of support from the National Treasury in topping up these 1% debt, but obviously it is always limited to what's in their budget. We will have to figure this thing out. on the one hand around efficiencies in terms of how we audit, especially the smaller entities, but on the other hand about how we fund the audit service that's offered by the office. So that's going to take on much more prominence in the work of the office over the forthcoming year or two. Noted the comment about Blackburn. We'll definitely look into it, Chair. I thought 52% was worth bragging about, but I'm hearing Honourable Singh say, yes, keep going. Very nice, but keep going. The special report on the certificates of debt, can we make sure that we give a clear report, standalone report on it, and absolutely we'll make sure that that is a feature of what we report to the committee. On the COVID-19 methodology and what can we learn from it, and I think that was the key points that the Honourable Chair wanted me to talk to. There are lessons that we can transfer from this. You're right, Chair, that we did this in a very short space of time. The key things that are quite clear to us at the moment are that we do benefit if we integrate our audit lines even more than we have done before. There's immense opportunities for making sure that we apply an integrated team comprising the skills of fraud experts, the skills of information systems auditors, the performance auditors, as well as the regularity auditors, so that you just get a much richer set of insights. The use of data analytics has been particularly interesting for us in terms of being able to look across data sets of government, across different institutions, and that's where some of the insights would have arisen from. When we were able to highlight the beneficiaries of the SASA special grant or the UIF by comparing it to other data sets, that became a pretty powerful tool in terms of highlighting weaknesses that allow people to benefit in a way that's not consistent with the design or expectations. So, a whole of government approach, using much more data and analysis, looking across institutions and across data sets is one thing that we will most certainly have to do a lot more of and transfer into the regularity audit. We'll still have to do regularity audits, but look backwards in terms of a year that's already been concluded, financials prepared, and financials submitted. That's what the law requires of us to do. However, this experience highlights that there are opportunities, exciting opportunities for us to look at particular programs for proactive real-time audits, and not to do that reflection in theoretical terms, but to have the courage to take it on, as scary as it might sometimes feel. But I think for our team, this has brought a lot of courage in terms of being able to take on different things. For government, in terms of internal environments within government, I think this highlights a unique opportunity for us to deploy internal audit much more effectively than what we've done before. Can you imagine, Chair, if we had internal auditors that were analyzing these expenditures and offering these insights to accounting officers, to audit committees, on a real-time, proactive basis, so that the changes that need to be done, to be made, the improvements that need to be effected, are effected long before the AD comes. So I think that's another opportunity for all of us to collaborate on. Chair, I hope I've responded to the question. You're on mute, Chair.
Thank you very much. Chair, your questions, Honourable Singh, are they responded satisfactorily?
No, thank you very much. Excellent. I must say excellent. Thank you.
No, fine. Colleagues, are there any other matters that you think that the Office of the AG would have to respond on? One, two, three. Well, I think as we have indicated, Deputy Auditor General, the impressive nature of work which has been conducted by your teams during the COVID-19 audit period
is really very much appreciable. We know that you took it chunk by chunk, and we were expecting the second bit of that report to come end of November. Here you are, as part of your report, you are highlighting some of the areas that even yourselves have been the routes that you have undertaken in terms of the real-time audit. It is a fact that, it's very worrisome, that you would have internal audits, the units established in various departments, various entities. What even the risk units and so forth, and the main worrying thing is to whether they receive some repute outlook that they ought to receive as such, because they are employed for particular reasons. Well, it's not your task. You are getting in as auditors as such, but primarily the facts that you have raised, that other things would have been easier if the internal auditors would have got into work on these matters. Things would have been easy, you know. And it might be that is one of the things that you would want to assist in terms of not only their establishment, but to ensure that they receive some kind of an ear and eye in any department where they are somewhat established. Because it somewhat carries that note which says they are not necessarily receiving the attention they're supposed to receive, you know. I was once the MBC for finance in another province, our office took that as a special program to ensure that those units are staffed appropriately, they receive requisite skills as guaranteed, so that they are somewhat at the height of their own performance. But you don't just have those units as the just-haves, you know. So I agree with you there. And the second area, which I think, as we have emphasized that point with the Honorable C, that it looks like not only the speed, but as well the quality of work which has been produced out of that kind of an audit is something that we remain proud of as the committee. And for us to remain proud, we must see even further than the outcomes, but how the response of those auditees is to the matter that you have raised with them. So on the first installment, and then there's going to come the second installment, which is going to might justify the first point, the first installment findings going through as such. So indeed, in your work you have such. The last thing from me is that you are tabling this report to us. I think as expressed by members, that this is something which you appreciate, we're very proud of, but unfortunately you are doing so at a time when the leader of the institution is leaving, the Auditor General is leaving, and we are to receive the newly appointed Auditor General probably within no time before the end of this month. So that then coming up with these kinds of plans and the strategy going forward, taken from this report, those things would have to probably get back to us, because there would be then a new leader AC. So our adoption of this kind of a report should as well create a flexible way of dealing with it, knowing very well that we are in the process as Parliament to have an appointment of the new head of the institution as the auditor, auditor general. So we must leave that and put it on record that at this time around is not only a compliance matter. Is a matter which is strategic for us. If it's strategic, let's treat both instances in a way which says we accept the report, and in accepting the report would know very well that there would be a need that in developing the strategy based on this kind of a report going forward is going to require a relook on these other things. When the Office of our General comes back to us, would have to do so at a time which would allow not the reviewal of this, but some kind of an outlook which implements the good that we have seen and sought to integrate such into the new mind and spirit which is going to come with a new leader within the collective that kinds exist. So honorable members, I think that's where we are, and then we need a proposal, firm proposal on the surplus. Do you agree on the retention of the surplus? What is it that would prevent us from agreeing from retention of such a surplus? Honourable members, are you still there?
Yes, Chairperson. Yes, I think this is a graveyard shift. You know, we've had a long day. I see that we have a scheduled meeting for the 23rd of October, and maybe Peter Paul can guide us where we're going to consider and adopt the report on the integrated annual report. And I don't know if it's at that stage in our report we include the item of surplus, or do we have to do it now? I just need to be guided on that one, Chairperson.
Yes. So you're proposing that let's take the decision at that point when we have an adoption of this. You know, my view was that here we are, we've received this annual report, and in the seat of the annual report, when we finalize the debate on it, at least the indicative areas that we must find a way of expressing ourselves on. If you say towards the end of October, it's well and good. Peter Paul?
Chairperson,
if I may, may I just allow Mr. Mkhanti to come in at this point and make a proposal quickly.
Chair and honorable members, good evening. Yes, honorable thing is correct. We normally consider that when we are dealing, we're deliberating with our report that we're going to take within the National Assembly. So we normally consider all these issues, that some of them that the chair already considered. In fact, I think I've made it clear in the brief that I wrote, that these are the things like the external, it described deliberation about external auditors, whether to reappoint an issue of the surplus, that we need to discuss that when we deliberate in our exclusive time, when we deliberate and consider our annual report that we're going to spend to the National Assembly for taping. Thank you, Chair. I think all of this is correct. We normally put it in that.
Okay. No, fine.
Are you happy, Honorable Singh?
Yes, thank you. But as I say, Chair, I have no problem in moving for the adoption of that surplus, but perhaps we should consider it when we do the entire report. Thank you.
Okay. Well, fine. If that was the case, I think in absence of any other thing, we really need to appreciate that the Office of the Auditor General has enabled us to deliberate on the report and find time to listen from them in terms of the tabling of such report. And we take pride in the fact that indeed with that eloquence we have received the report quite well. In both instances, the committee on the audit and as well as the Office of the Auditor General. So from our side, Deputy Auditor General, let's appreciate that we have represented the Auditor General quite well, and we hope to be with him in the following meeting, at least to find time to square up with him, as he is on his way way out, and be able to give the members of the committee time to express themselves on his service in a way. But convey appreciation for this piece of work, inclusive of what your teams are doing in as far as the COVID-19 audits are concerned. So thank you very much. Thank you very much, colleagues, and good evening. The meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.